this to send Bosnia and Herzegovina to the World Cup. Barek Tarnovic scores! Italy beaten. Their worst nightmares have come true. Bosnia Herzegovina have done it.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
On Easter weekend, it's Easter Monday, we'll be talking. So we're a bit lighter than usual. Jan's not here again. Yeah, throw a double to start. Jan Bilton is not with us this week. But we're here. We're here to talk about all the fun and games that's been going on over the last week in football. And luckily, there has been some stuff going on. We've just had two rounds of EFL. We had some FA Cup action as well over the weekend in the men's and the women's. And, of course, there was loads of international football. But, Terry, it must feel like ages for you since your club played any football.
Well, that's because it has been ages. Shall I tell you, Graham?
Yes, please do.
So the last football match the Crystal Palace played was the 21st of March against Manchester City. Oh, no, wait. No, it wasn't. That match was postponed because Manchester City were beating Arsenal in the League Cup final.
They were.
The last match that Crystal Palace played was the 19th of March, and that was a Conference League game against Larnaca. And then prior to that, the last Premier League match that Crystal Palace have played was the 15th of March. And it is the 6th of April now. The next Premier League match that Crystal Palace will play will be at Selhurst Park on the 12th of April.
So almost a month.
It's so almost a month.
4 weeks between games.
Do you know what the problem with modern football is these days, Graham?
Tell me, please.
It's fixture congestion. Well, that's the problem. That's the problem with football these days.
Yes.
Yes. It can't be helped. We got kicked out of the cup by Macclesfield in the third round, and we played a team that was playing in the cup final. And that's messed up our schedule to a very large degree. So actually, you know, we got back-to-back Conference League games before we play any Premier League. It's a peculiarity. I think it is a bug rather than a feature.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, like if this was Talksport, we could spend the next half an hour talking about it and see if we could get some rubes to call in and say how wrong it all is.
Yes, yes. Please, if there's any rubes listening, and I know there aren't any rubes listening, but please don't call in.
No, because we don't give out our number specifically for
reason. But you know how this works, Terry. They will call TalkSport anyway. I'll just be listening to Sound Football, and I'd just like to come in.
I encourage listeners to do exactly that. If you've heard anything in our podcast that you think, oh, I should really, don't engage with us. Engage with TalkSport on the matter.
Because they'll appreciate it.
They could do with a bit of improvement. Yeah. They'll love it. Yeah, well, they love content. I mean, they're on 24 hours a day. They're desperate to keep going.
It's a shame that you're not into that much into the Crystal Palace women's team, because they've been doing all right, actually, and they got a good win again this week, and they're looking like they might snatch an automatic promotion place.
They've got two matches left. They've got to play Sunderland and they've got to play Portsmouth.
Yeah, Portsmouth, yeah. But this is while the top two currently have to play each other.
Yeah, on the final day. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So there's a good chance that we will nab that second spot. We're currently third. We're almost certain to get that playoff spot. But I don't like, as we know, relegation playoff spots are terrible and should be banned.
Yes.
And they should never have been allowed. That should have been a four-way playoff. Anyway, so Palace are in that spot. But yeah, because Charlton and Birmingham play each other on the final game of the season, there is every chance that Palace just need to hold their nerve and go through. So yeah, I am massively across where the women are playing, and I'm optimistic that we could pip Charlton. That'd be nice. I think we'd all enjoy that.
Well, considering how far Charlton were ahead in WSL 2, that would be something as well. But of course, you get a good feeling with the women's team doing well, but of course it can bite you in the arse, that. as I, an Arsenal fan, discovered this weekend, when within the space of 24 hours, both Arsenal men and Arsenal women were dumped out of their respective FA Cups by stripy shirt wearing South Coast teams. There are far too many stripy shirt South Coast teams these days. Please eliminate two of them.
Cool talk sport. Have your say.
I am not a crank.
Not a crank.
Yeah, no, that wasn't lost on me as well. I thought, oh, God, it's the South Coast curse.
It is.
Yeah, grim stuff. Losing at home to Brighton. I mean, obviously Brighton are a solid WSL side. Everyone knows this, but that must have been a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I think some people are saying now that they can't play at Boreham Wood anymore, that they've become too fancy pants and only want the pitch at the Emirates to play on.
Yeah, and the fancy dressing room and all that.
Yeah, they could have a point. It could be a point there. But yeah, so that was a deserved win for Brighton. They played very well, and Arsenal didn't. Arsenal played reasonably well against Chelsea in midweek, had a big game there, Champions League quarterfinal, second leg. But of course, they go out of the FA Cup. The day after, Arsenal men go out of the FA Cup away to Southampton. And hats off to Southampton, because that was a fantastic display from them. And fully deservedly go through to the semi-finals.
That story of Southampton this season, it's been quite a wild ride, isn't it? I mean, starting with Will Still. And I think we've said this before. I mean, apparently they were quite good under Will Still, but just didn't win football matches. And Tonda Eckert's come in, who is extraordinary. He's a very interesting guy when he's being interviewed, Tonda Eckert. He's got his eyes. His eyes are very, very intense. They're very wide. And they're very intense. And also, whenever he's asked a question, he always leaves about a second of dead air before answering it, which is really disconcerting. He's also ridiculously painfully young as well. I mean, like, he's a child, you know. I mean, it's just like it shouldn't be allowed, really. But really, really good. Hopefully, from their point of view, this will not be too much of a distraction from them, because they are on an absolute tear in the league as well. They were supposed to be playing Ipswich this weekend. They've missed out on two games this weekend because of the semi-final. They've now got two games to catch up on. And I think if they had just started a little bit, their run a little bit earlier, they'd be possibly, you know, getting in for that automatic spot, given that that now appears to be up for grabs. But you know, you'd think on that form, they look very good to win the playoffs.
Well, they do. I mean, if they do win their two games in hand, remember Ipswich have got two games in hand as well. Mm. So they're on 72, Coventry are on 83. And as you say, they do have to play Ipswich. I do think they're stick-ons for getting into the playoffs, because they are just 1 point behind Wrexham at the moment with one game in hand over Wrexham. And both Wrexham and Hull are in different form, and Middlesbrough are now looking very shaky as well. And Millwall lost again today. So, yeah, if you look at one team in the top half, really, who looks to be in the best form going into the playoffs, it's Southampton. And the way they played against Arsenal, you'd say, well, I defy any other team in the Championship to beat them at the moment. They look absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they have got that consistency, don't they, at the moment? I mean, much like Ipswich. Middlesbrough just fallen off a cliff, aren't they? I mean, they're currently, as we speak, 2-1 down to Swansea. So it's all very fluid. I think probably the two best teams in that whole scenario at the moment are probably Ipswich and Southampton.
Yeah.
Although Millwall lost today, but they did beat Middlesbrough on Friday. It's a very, very intriguing playoff and promotion race now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really exciting to see what happens in the next six or so games left. And Southampton very definitely part of that equation, assuming that the FA Cup doesn't end up interrupting their flow. But, you know, the point is you just got to keep playing, keep winning.
Yeah.
That's literally how it works, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, the draw wasn't kind, and so it looks like it's going to be a City-Chelsea final. That's what the romance of the FA Cup's all about, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. And then we're all massively here for it. City and Chelsea, two of the nicest football clubs that you'll ever come across. Good, clean football clubs. Very much play in the spirit of the game.
Yes.
Good to see the draw being kind to them. It's what football wants.
Yes. Cheatsy versus Man 115 City. Yes, that's exactly what everyone wants to see anyway, doesn't it? Well, some people want to see it. Some people want to see City do well, don't they, Terry?
They do. Although sometimes I'm thinking to myself, do they really want City to win, or do they just want Arsenal to lose, Graham?
Well,
do they want Arsenal to lose?
I think it's perfectly normal for people who support other clubs to want Arsenal to lose.
Mm.
They are a club that people don't like for certain reasons. For certain reasons. And certainly if you're a Tottenham fan, yeah, you go all in on City overhauling them for the league title. It really is not out of the question. All right, why do people want to see, would rather see City win the title rather than Arsenal? Because some people have done some research on this, and it turns out that more people want to see City win the title than Arsenal win it. And of course, and broadcasters would love it because it makes the end of the season a lot more interesting. And the last couple of results look like Arsenal might be wobbling. And I suppose that makes good conversation as well. TalkSport must be going to town on this one.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, like you know, you can hear Jason Cundy, even from the South Coast, sort of like rattling on about it. I think there's always been, because as you just alluded to, Graham, there's always been historic beef about with Arsenal. Almost every football club has got a reason for disliking Arsenal Football Club, going all the way back to Herbert Chapman. Yep. You know, frankly, you know, I mean, you can go back as far as the beginning of professional club football for people to find reasons for disliking Arsenal. So there is all of that, and that is given. I think there's an additional layer, and I think Mikel Arteta appears to have something to do with that. He seems to rub people up the wrong way. I genuinely don't see it. I know there was a period of time when he sort of like had his antics, his touchline antics, which for me didn't appear to be worse than the worst managers that I've seen. But it just seems to somehow stick in people's craw. I'm not altogether beyond that. I'm not altogether certain why Arsenal are particularly disliked any more than the usual surface level of dislike that there is there. But it does seem to be quite real. And I think that a lot of people, when it comes to City, they probably just don't care about City's cheating. They just don't care.
Yeah. I think there is a lot of that. I personally have felt that over the last few years, because it was long before they were actually charged with 115 charges. I thought that this is a state-owned football club that is obviously sports washing. So every time they won a title, for me, it was like no one won a title. It was like, well, City have won. Okay, fine. They were meant to. They've got more money than anyone else. They can just outspend their way to get whatever they want. Similarly, when Chelsea were winning as well, it was... Chelsea have won it, so they've obviously cheated their way. And as it turns out, yes, they were. I think with Arsenal, I think there's many ways of going to this. The most recent way of looking at it, I think, is under Wenger. Under Wenger, they were an easy target to hate. Wenger was obviously a pantomime villain for a lot of people. Doing his post-match, I didn't see it, stock price. It was his catchphrase in the end, wasn't it? But there was a time when everyone in the media absolutely loved Arsenal because of the way that Wenger had them playing, and he had them playing in such a lovely flowing way. And I think that's something that is actually coming back to Arteta. Is one of the things why they don't like about him. He's a bit too savvy for that, and so he actually plays in a way that makes them win rather than makes them look pretty, which would be fine for any other club. But I think people think, oh well, look, if we have to have a successful Arsenal to moan about, then at least they can be pretty to the eye. But I think you're right. It's historical, the hatred of Arsenal. And I think there is some important things about that, because traditionally football was a northern sport. It was in the industrial heartlands up in the north. And it's no coincidence that when Arsenal became successful, having been a team that pretty much did nothing for the first 40-odd years it was in the Football League, as soon as the Great Depression starts, everyone in London suddenly starts to become better, whereas the industrial teams in the north basically fail, like the towns and cities that they were in. So success in the south, along with the fact that the Depression wasn't affecting the south as much as it was the north, I think that plays into a lot of feelings. Arsenal became a focus then back in the 1930s of basically people not liking London and thinking that London had basically stolen their sport off them.
Yeah, it's interesting because it plays play in, because I mean, it's slightly adjacent to football, not completely adjacent to football. I mean, like, London is going through a bit of a reputational issue at the moment, isn't it? London is the target of what I would characterise as bad actors who are deliberately bad-mouthing London, suggesting that it's... No, we're not just suggesting, stating outright that it's a dangerous place, that you can't walk the streets, it's not safe. And this is, in my opinion, this is political. And so it's quite interesting that you know, I wonder whether or not maybe there's an element of that in that, because it's been said by others, not here, that despite the fact that London has, what, 13 professional clubs,
yeah,
and a good number of them are top flight clubs, that actually, if you don't support one of those other clubs, the only club you support is Arsenal.
Yeah.
And that there are people who are of the view that actually Arsenal is, at this point now, the most popular club or the number one club in London. Most football supporters in London actually support Arsenal.
Mm.
I don't know. It's a vibe opinion, but I think a lot of it might be just based on people's experience of just like being around London and seeing a lot of Arsenal shirts. And of course, their massive online presence. You know, they've got things like, we've talked about AFTV and Arsenal Fan TV with great fun and all, but I think also things like Arsblog, for example, which is a completely different type of media organization, very, very much more straightforward, more serious, very good, frankly, with good people. That thing has been around for almost since the beginning of the football internet.
Yeah.
And has grown with the football internet. And to a very large degree, I think it's quite good at steering the agenda, perhaps in a way that upsets other people and they just don't like it. A couple of guys that I'd know, Liverpool fans, can't stand Arsenal.
Yeah.
Just would want anyone but them. And I wonder if there is perhaps that kind of north-south or northern northwest sort of like London tension that exists. It's already a combination of different reasons.
It is probably a combination of lots of different things. You have to remember as well is that before the 1960s, football wasn't a national phenomenon.
Mm.
People who were only interested in football if you lived near a football ground, attending football. Of course, people played it everywhere. But as far as professional football was concerned, if you went to see your team play, you probably walked to the stadium or got a bus. That was probably it. You see these lovely old grounds there right in the middle of terraced houses. And yes, nearly everyone walked to the stadium, probably from the factory that they worked in. It was only when it became a TV show in the 1960s, when Match of the Day started, that football started to reach all the far corners of the country. And this is why when you go to the southwest, everyone supports Man United and Liverpool. Not because they won all the time. Well, it actually was because they won all the time. It was all the time. Because in the 1960s, there was a period of about four seasons when either Man United or Liverpool won the title. It was classic Busby versus Shankly. And this was when people were buying their TVs. This was when Match of the Day was coming into their homes. And this is what they got served with every week, was this monumental battle between Man United and Liverpool. So sending that around to every corner of the country, then all of a sudden people have got a vested interest in football. Now, in the 1960s, the team that had won more titles than anyone else was Arsenal. So they were the teams that you had to overhaul. These are the ones that Liverpool had to overhaul. And I think they did it when they won their ninth title, I think. And then Man United did the same as well. So they both overhauled them to become the two big sides in the country. But I think as well that a lot of football media was based in that northwest. ITV Granada, now Salford, is the home of BBC as well. So the whole vibe of football media and the tone of it is very northwest centric. So that doesn't help if you're a very, very successful club in London.
It's interesting, the idea of London football clubs or London football being somehow regarded as something of an insurgent into the establishment, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
it's not normal. Normally in the UK, London is usually comes first, and that's one of the many reasons why people take against London so much. And this is not an unreasonable thing, but yeah, professional football in England is very much the preserve of the North, and in particular the Northwest. And yeah, so when you see clubs from the south doing well, yeah, it does appear you do get some quite interesting reactions. And I guess, you know, to a very large degree, that's still perceived as where the main sort of like audience is. It's still very much northwest centric, if not people in the northwest, then people who support northwest clubs, of which there are many. And yeah, I mean, all of these things feel as though they're under the surface and they're not obvious. I doubt very much that, you know, people who work in football media based in the Northwest or cover, you know, or anywhere really, wake up in the morning and think, oh, Arsenal are taking over football. I don't think they don't look at it like that. And that's not really what we're saying. No. It's just really a question of what, trying to understand the underlying reasons as to why, you know, why things are, why people think a certain way, why people take against a football club. Well, there's any number of reasons why you should hate Arsenal.
Well, yeah, there is.
There's tons of reasons. Take your pick. You know,
and they don't have to be rational as well, listeners.
No.
That's the wonderful thing about football is you can really have an irrational dislike that cannot be explained. All we've tried to do is present for you a few reasons why you can maybe have a rational dislike for something. But hey, that's just the way things are, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, we're certainly not here to change your mind.
No, certainly not
here at all. And if you've got, no, goodness, in fact, you know, the last thing we want to do is to change your mind on this. Is you stick to your guns, listener.
Exactly. I mean, Terry, as you say, Liverpool fans, I mean, I'm perfectly happy with Liverpool fans hating Arsenal. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Crack on, please.
Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, if I was in your position, I'd say you can stuff your good. I don't want your goodwill, even if you had any. I wouldn't want it. Stick it up your ass, I'd say. And rightly so, just because this is the correct way to think about these things when it comes to football. And, you know, listeners, if you agree with what we've said or you got anything to say, then call TalkSport. Tell them we sent you though. Yeah,
yeah, you'll have to look up the number yourself. I don't have it to
yeah,
have,
no, so. Yeah, don't worry. This is the moment when we find out if we've got any TalkSport people who listen to the podcast.
Oh, God, really? Oh, yeah. Anyway, let's not talk about why people hate Arsenal or London, for that matter. Because what would we know, being liberal elites and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't know anything about that. We're completely blind to all of that kind of nonsense.
Should we talk Italy instead, then?
Certainly, because this is very serious.
Very serious indeed for Italy, because something comical happened last week. Something absolutely hilarious in that Italy failed to qualify for a third World Cup in succession. Yeah, three World Cups. That's a long time, isn't it, Terry?
It is a long time, and it's seismic. I think it's genuinely seismic. The idea of a World Cup without Italy was unthinkable the first time it happened. And now it's the third time it's happened. And now it's drifting into normal, isn't it? An expanded tournament of 48 teams and Italy still can't find a way through to qualification. That just feels completely and utterly wrong. And you have to wonder what on earth could be going wrong in Italy and in the Italian setup there for something like this to happen. I mean, their qualifying group, they're in with Norway, who obviously are a resurgent. They've got some high-profile players that have come in, not least of which is Erling Haaland, but also there's others as well who have come in. They are a good, strong side. But I suppose a lot of it is, even though it's a 48-team World Cup, you've still got to go through the peril of the playoffs. But it's just, you know, this is Italy. This is the team that managed to pretty much shithouse their way through the Euro final against England and win that game fair and square. But they outthought and outwilled England to win that game. These are the moments that they should be good at. They should be good at these kind of games. But it just suggests that there's just been a collective loss of will there. And it just isn't right. I mean, Italy is one of the giants of the football world. It's just not healthy for them to not be playing in the World Cup. It's bad for football, Graham.
Well, is it bad for football? I mean, some would say it's good for football because otherwise Italy would be stinking out the tournament and occupying a spot that someone else should have, someone like Bosnia.
Yeah, it's great for Bosnia. Of course it's great for Bosnia. And I'm delighted for Bosnia as well. I mean, I think it's bad for football while at the same time being quite pleased that it's happened.
Yeah.
Because it is quite funny, you know, to see you know, Italians upset about these things.
Terry, you and I were down the pub watching them the last time they won a knockout game at the World Cup. The only time they've won a game at the World Cup, because this doesn't just go back to like the last three qualification tournaments. The two previous tournaments, they hadn't got out the group. The only game they've won in the last 20 years at a World Cup was against, guess who?
England?
Yes, that's right.
So what game was that?
2014 in the group stage, when we both went out. Both England and Italy went out. Yeah, under Roy. Yeah, you remember it now, don't you?
Yeah, I do now, yeah.
Yes. But prior to that, the last game they won was the semi-final against Germany in 2006. The final was went to penalties, didn't it?
It went to penalties, of course it did, yeah. Because, of course, in sound of football law, and I think in a lot of other people's law, that semi-final against Germany was one of the best games of football ever played.
Yes.
In my book, anyway. I mean, I thought that that's one of the best, certainly one of the best World Cup games ever.
Yeah.
And one of the best games of football played ever. And it's, well, all right, okay, so they went one better and they closed out the tournament and won it. But it's been, they've gone from that zenith to being not just world champions, but also playing in one of the greatest ever games, albeit not the final, on the way to that final, to now this, losing away at Bosnia. It is quite a decline. There's an awful lot of soul searching, as you can well imagine, about what to do. And heads have rolled.
Yeah.
The president of Italian football, Gabriele Gravina, apologies for the mispronunciation there, he's gone. Gianluigi Buffon has gone as well. He was the, well, sporting director, for want of a better term. And of course, Gennaro Gattuso has also left. So a lot of people left. But the thing is that were they the problem to begin with? What is the issue? I think about Serie A, and I think a lot of people, when they think about Italian football decline, they might also then look at Serie A's perceived decline as well, like from it being the Premier League of the 1990s. I mean, like being the destination league for all professional footballers. They all wanted to go and play in Serie A. That's where the best teams were. That's where the best players were. That's where the biggest money was, until the Premier League came along and superseded them. But there's also things like, there's more players playing outside of Serie A now. Now, there's quite a few players playing in the English leagues now than there were playing in Serie A. And of course, yeah, I mean, or beyond Inter getting to the final of the Champions League, generally speaking, Italian teams don't perform well in Europe and haven't for a while. In fact, you know, gone are the days when they used to actually not take European competition that seriously because Serie A was so important. They really do struggle to compete. It's difficult to say because they won their under-19 European champions in 2024. They won an underage international trophy quite recently. I think that their program is decent. It's just that at the very top level, they just don't seem to be functioning and playing. And it made me think about something that people often say and have said in defense of Serie A. A lot of people who don't watch Serie A, and I don't watch much of it either, take the view that Serie A, it's a boring league because Italian football is boring. And everyone thinks about Catenaccio. And then people say, no, but it's not like that at all. Italian football is now exciting. It's got goals in it and stuff like that. Catenaccio is dead and all that stuff. And I said, well, is that part of the problem? Is there been a crisis of football identity? You know, what does an Italian team look like? When they beat us in the final, you know, as disappointing as it was more than disappointing, it was devastating. But you have to admire the way the Italians play their football, the way they prosecuted that game. And it was a prosecution.
Yeah.
They really toughed it out. And showing the best virtues of Italian football, even maybe not necessarily being the best practitioners of Italian football. But I wonder if they've kind of lost that.
I think you might be right there, Terry, because they have been doing okay in Europe in certain respects, not on a blanket charge. Like in this season, though, it was only what Atalanta got into the last 16, didn't they? And they got absolutely whooped, didn't they, by Bayern, wasn't it? But you look back at last year's final. Now, Inter made it all the way to the final. You don't get to the final by luck, but got absolutely whooped by PSG. They gave City a game in 23 in the final. But you've got to go back to 2010 for the last time an Italian club won the Champions League, which is a long time for even a country that hasn't always put its back into that competition. Maybe that 10 years of dominance of Juventus had a breaking effect on the whole league. Now, all the problems that have happened at Juve over the last few seasons as well, that's probably been disruptive. It might have turned people off there domestically, turned them off football. But you do have teams like, well, progressively, there's nearly always one surprise team that comes through and starts shaking things up a bit. a few years ago it was Atalanta, then it was Sassuolo, and this season it seems to be Como. That seems to be the not so much of a fairy tale, but they are the ones mixing things up in the league. And they look like they're going to be in the Champions League next season to finish somewhere very, very low down the mega table, I'm sure.
See also Bologna as well. Bologna, tremendous. But yeah, but like Atalanta, like they beat Leverkusen in the Europa League 2 seasons ago, whenever that was. I mean, like, who scored the hat-trick in that game? Was some dude from South London. Yeah. It's Adamola Lookman, right? He's not an Italian, you know. I mean, not to suggest that he carried the game, because that is definitely not the case. They were amazing under Gasperini. But, yeah, these are one-offs, and also, yeah, not necessarily sort of like reflecting Italian virtues. And it feels as though perhaps really what it comes down to is probably actually because immediately after 2006, you had the Calciopoli scandal that broke. Mm. Juventus were essentially broken. Yeah. They, I mean, they did obviously come back and they've had their moments, but they don't seem to dominate the league, presumably because they're no longer allowed to dominate the league in the way that they have previously been allowed to dominate the league, which was by cheating. So that perhaps maybe has just altered that shift in the balance has just like set the whole thing in ways that are difficult to really understand and follow. It's like, why are Tottenham so consistently rubbish? They get good managers, proven managers to come in, and yet there's just something at the core of that club that just doesn't seem to work, which is going to make it so much harder to fix. And it feels as though maybe this is just what's happening with the Italian football in general. They don't seem to be able to do anything right. And there's even suggestions that they might lose their co-hosting rights for Euro 2032.
Yeah, this is a big concern because we're only 6 years away from it now. And only two of the venues are ready for it at the moment. Other ones are still in the planning stage. You get the feeling, well, is this actually going to happen? Are they going to have that taken away from them? And you would think, well, yes, they should, because everything they seem to do just seems to take forever. They just can't seem to get themselves together. And you sort of think, well, no, they're not going to be in any shape to co-host a tournament, let alone host one. So, yeah, and I'm sure Turkey will say, right, okay, no, we can sort this out. We can do this and we'll take it all.
Yeah, I mean, there's every chance that Turkey could probably take up the slack. I mean, it is obviously a big tournament. But I think the thing is that, you know, bluntly, if it isn't Turkey, then Germany could just step in and fill those fixtures. You know, and there politically, there's some value in a Germany-Turkey co-hosting. I think it might be quite helpful and useful for those two guys to get together and collaborate on a project that didn't involve one of them being massively subservient to the other. So that might be quite a cool thing. I'd quite like to see it. I don't like to see Italian football decline because Italy is one of the cornerstones of the game, the world game. But at the same time, I guess you also have to... And I still don't like it because also the game is changing.
Yeah.
It's changing a lot. And it's changing in a very bad way. It's becoming inherently deeply, deeply politicized by really, really nasty people. And it needs its traditional institutions to be able to maintain, I don't know, some kind of sporting integrity. It's funny to sort of like, you know, look to Italy of all countries with their extreme right-wing leader and with their history of shenanigans. But it's a question really more about institutions and maintaining those institutions. And it feels as though, you know, we're diminished by a weak Italy. So you would want to see this turned around fairly quickly. But it could need even government intervention, not at management level, but it might need some money. Sounds to me like some money needs to be spent. And a new coach, of course. Mm. And we could even be looking at the prospect of a foreign coach managing an Italy side.
Wow, yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah. I've read some other stuff, other ideas, and there are some people who are saying, well, the Italians themselves are moving away from football, and they're looking at the success that they've got in tennis and Formula One at the moment, and they're thinking, yeah, these are the ponies to back. Yeah. While Serie A has become a retirement league, all of a sudden, all the young, exciting talent is in other sports.
Yeah, maybe if the money is moving away, a bit like West Indian cricket, I guess. The money is moving to other sports. And again, unlike West Indian cricket, if the reputation has been tarnished for so many years, then at some point, it might well be that respectable people will go, well, we don't really want to be associated with this anymore. If I turn up at a football ground and I don't know where my seat is because, like, I don't know which entrance to go through. I mean, like, you know, or I'm worried about violence and hooliganism. I'm worried about angry voices and angry supporters. I'm worried about bringing my children to something like this. I mean, a lot of people might go, well, is this really a life to get into? I don't know. I mean, it's something to think about.
Mm.
And there's lessons to be learned for us all, I think.
Really? Really?
Oh, yeah. I don't think.
What could we learn from Italian football? I mean, it's not like we've got sides who have cheated their way to numerous titles, have we?
No, but I mean, well, the lessons that we have learned, well, I say we, the lessons that our authorities have learned is to make absolutely certain that whoever does commit cheating is allowed to get away with it.
I mean, it comes to something when Italians will be looking at us and say, really? Really?
I mean, in fairness, I think the thing we catch up with is that the law was broken, wasn't it? I think this is the thing. If you drift, and this is the lesson for the English clubs, is that don't drift into messing with the law of the land. When Mr. Plod comes calling, obviously then things change. Actually, that's complete nonsense, isn't it? I completely forgot we live in the UK, don't we? I mean, that's I can't believe I said that out loud.
Oh, so naive. Well, I did mention Como. And if you want to see the miracle that is Como, then they're in our box set this weekend. Yes, on Sunday evening, they are playing Inter, top of the table Inter, who are pretty much cruising their way to the title. Bit of a local derby there. Como is just a short trip north. And that is part of the box set this weekend, along with games such as Norwich versus Nigel Farage's Ipswich on Saturday lunchtime, Terry. As you say, plenty of twists and turns in this championship run-in, so that should be an interesting game. Norwich just beat Millwall today, so no love lost there in the East Anglia derby.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's going to be a classic game, and with so much at stake. I think Norwich are really there to spoil the party at this point. Unfortunately, they're not going to make it, but it's still, they're in really, really good form. I think they'll be very keen to try and derail Nigel Farage's Ipswich.
Liverpool trying to get their quest for Champions League football next season back on track, and maybe try and get a decent game out of Mo Salah before he leaves the club at the end of the season. But Fulham are chasing them down, and well, what would that mean if Fulham could get something at Anfield this weekend?
I think Liverpool are close to total implosion at this point anyway. Apparently there was an emergency meeting that the players called after the game against City. And I mean, that club is in crisis right now. And yeah, along comes a club like Fulham, who I think are more than capable of exploiting teams in crisis.
Well, if you want to see what we think of all these games, all seven games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe. And it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Carried the game, because that is definitely not the case. They were amazing under Gasperini. And like, Gasperini is now, I mean, like, Gasperini well into his 60. I apologize.
Yes, the Italian football alarm went off there, didn't it?
Yeah. It's it's the Gasparini button. So don't mention Gasparini. I don't know why. For some reason, we don't like Gasparini in this house.